Man, the way the grain markets were trading early this morning, it looked like it was going to be one of those days. As it turns out, it wasn't a good day for the grains, but it was a whole lot better than it could have been. And livestock, not too bad. But they'd better figure out if they're following the cash markets or the meat markets.
Live from the autumn of our discontent via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Richard Brock from Brock & Associates. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much.
I say just the autumn of our discontent. I'm not okay. Sure winter is here yet when it comes to the discontentedness. We'll let you know.
You know, and it's becoming...
We're getting there.
It's becoming a bigger and bigger issue all the time. I'm still calling it a conversation, although the name-calling is clearly part of the conversation between the two sides of we've got to keep the country shut down versus those that are saying we've waited too long, we need to restart the economy or do what we can to restart the economy right now. But as we were talking with Senator Ernst this morning in the first hour of AgriTalk, she's on the task force, Reopen America White House task force. But when they make the decision to go ahead and do it, it's not going to be like flipping a switch and here we go back to March 1, 2020. Let's go.
Right. Well,
it's
and this
going
as
to take time.
Especially here at home, it hits hard because apparently I just saw a video of it a little earlier. Rachel Maddow was featuring a story about the packing plant right in our own Black Hawk County.
Yeah.
On what is it, MSNBC she's on? I don't even know.
I'm not sure. Yeah. And they should be. And they should be featuring the Tyson plant here at Waterloo. Yep. The state of Iowa, more than 400 new cases. We talked about it at the end of last week. We put the warning out again yesterday. This is going to be a tough week for the state of Iowa because of the number of confirmed COVID cases that are going to happen. It's in the people that are working at the slaughterhouses across the state. And I don't know if you guys have looked at a map of where the slaughterhouses are located in this country, but take a look at it, okay? And if you want to know why I'm worried about the week that Iowa is going to have, that's the reason. That is the reason. Now, southern Minnesota's in the same book. Eastern Nebraska, you bet. You bet. Looking at a situation this week that is going to, I'm not going to say that we won't get through it, but it's going to be a difficult week. It's going to be a challenge to get through this, Davis. That's what I wondered. I wondered if I lost Davis because he's out there.
Yes.
There he is.
I feel like I'm coming and going. I don't know which.
All right.
I don't know.
We just talked about what a tough week it's going to be in the state of Iowa because of the COVID cases. So, well, should we tempt fate and go ahead and go for this? You want to hit the news?
Let's try it. I don't think we'll get far, but we'll begin. Winter wheat futures posted an inside day with a high range open and a low range close. Chart watchers say that suggests a test of support at yesterday's low of 535.5 in July SRW futures before the end of the week. The lower close came despite a 5-point drop in winter wheat rated good to excellent to 57%, On Pro Farmers Crop Condition Index, 0 to 500 point scale, the hard red winter wheat crop is rated 338. That's 28 points below year ago, but 26 points higher than the 5-year average. Continued support for wheat prices was taken from restricted exports out of the Black Sea region as countries there limit shipments to maintain domestic supplies. July hard red winter wheat was 1¾ cents higher at 504. July soft red slipped a penny and a quarter to 546¼. July spring wheat fell 5¼ cents to close at 517¾. Chip.
Yeah, Brian Grady, the editor at Pro Farmer, has got a lot of history in that Pro Farmer Crop Condition Index. I was part of that when we put it together back in the late 90s, Davis. So there's a lot of information included in that. But zero is complete crop failure. It'd be like 100% of the crop rated very poor to 500, 100% of the winter wheat crop rated excellent. But obviously that doesn't happen. That 338, you know, it's about the last year was a heck of a good rating at this time of the year, and we're still above the five-year average on it. So right now, it's starting to reflect some of the freeze damage the HRW crop is, but it's
okay.
It's not serious yet.
All right. Well, May corn futures posted a low of 301 in early trade. That matches the 2016 low, and chart watchers say the bounce from session lows at least gives the market a chance at a long-term double bottom. However, demand destruction by way of the ethanol industry is likely to limit the ability of the market to rally for the near term. Also, corn planting is just underway, and generally good conditions in most areas of the Corn Belt are increasing the likelihood that growers will plant the 97 million intended corn acres this year. May corn futures were a nickel lower, 309 and a quarter. July corn fell a nickel to 317 and a quarter. December corn closed at 332. That one's also down a nickel on the day, but a dandy little recovery there off session lows, Chip.
Yeah, absolutely. The May contract was, what, 8.25 off the session lows for the close. So it doesn't, like I said in the open, it wasn't a bad day, could have been. It could have been a bad day, no question about it. I think there's also some anticipation that we're going to start to see some export demand come back into this corn market. That might have helped the market bounce off lows, but that's probably premature.
Okay. Well, corn futures are watching the energy markets for some price direction, but the extreme pressure on crude oil futures is weighing on the soy complex as well by way of reduced pricing for global vegetable oil supplies. Last night, Malaysian palm oil prices dropped 7.5%, putting downside pressure on U.S. bean prices. May soybean futures spiked support at the March low and quickly recovered on short covering and continued soybean meal demand. May bean futures were 4.25 cents higher, 8.30¾. July beans firmed 4.5 cents to 8.40¾. November bean futures closed at 8.48. That's up 2.25 on the day, Chip.
Yeah, we always like to talk about the influence of the meal market on bean prices. Sometimes we lose track of the bean oil influence on bean prices, and that's a negative right now. There's no question about that.
Heavyweight choice graded boxes were sharply higher on slow movement this morning. That helped to limit selling in live cattle futures. Still, the market is struggling with slaughter issues. Total cattle slaughter to start the week was just 90,000 compared to a normal of 120K in daily cattle processing. June live cattle down 102.5 to 84.07.5. August cattle fell $1.60 to 88.50. May feeders were 52.5 cents lower, 116.75. And on the snout side, pork cutout prices are pushing to the upside as slaughter levels collapse. Slaughter to start the week was just 370,000, about 100,000 below normal. May lean hogs, 367.5 higher, 44.27.5, and July fell 85 cents to 52.92.5. Chip.
Yeah, these slaughter levels, dude. I'm telling you, boy, I hope we can find a way to get back closer to those normal slaughter levels, or we're going to have a real issue to deal with. For a while today, the May crude oil contract was trading on top of the June futures price.
Oh,
yes, for a very short period today, but it did happen. It did happen. I saw it. We're going to start the conversation with what's happening in the oil market with Rick Brock from Brock & Associates next. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture farms on for our family and yours.
You know I'm a dreamer, but my heart's of gold.
Cool.
I had to run.
Justin,
sing it, man. You've drowned a few worms with this guy, haven't you?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy. Absolutely. Done a little
hobnobbing.
Turkey hunting.
Hobnobbing.
done a little turkey hunt with that one. Yeah. All right. Let's get right to it. Rick Brock from The Brock Report, Brock and Associates up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, joins us right now. Rick, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Chip, it's good to be vertical and talking. I can tell you that.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I tell you, just when you start feeling like you've seen everything that a market would ever have to deal with, along comes 2020 and what we're dealing with now. Definition of black swan, no way that you could see this coming.
Yeah. You know, I think you take a look at what's happening right now. This is probably the most stressful time any of us have ever lived through, both living condition-wise, socialization, and especially business and farm marketing. And whenever people are under stress, it's very difficult to make decisions. Most people don't make good decisions at all, right. No matter what aspect of their life it is, if people are under stress. And that's where we are. It's where most people are right now. And like you said, I mean, I think most of us prior to yesterday would have said, well, commodity prices can't go below zero. Well, guess what? We found out that they can. And I don't think we can see that in grains or livestock, although I can still remember 9-cent hogs several years ago. But, you know, the reality is this has been several black swans at the same time. The first was what's happened in the oil industry between the Saudis and the Russians and flooded the market with oil. And then all of a sudden, the COVID virus hits. And all of a sudden, you know, we have less demand for oil. People aren't traveling, et cetera. So you couldn't have had two worse conditions at a time. But what happened yesterday and what's going on in the oil market, you know, is really a very negative situation, I'm afraid, for the ethanol industry and the corn industry. We probably haven't seen the end of ethanol plants closing. And so then the question is going to be back, when can we get this back? And no one knows the answer to that. But we've really hurt demand tremendously. Right. And the other thing that it does, though, and I think what we're going to find is, you know, we talk about, well, when is this corn market going to go back up? Let's keep in mind, there are many farmers out there that will make more money if this thing keeps going down. Example, and, you know, the last two times I've been on your program, Chip, was in November and February, and I had a few of your listeners call and tell me how smart they thought I was because we were 100% sold in corn. And it wasn't a polite way of telling me how smart I was. I assure you that, and I'll leave out all the adjectives, but that was over a dollar ago, and so they probably have a little different framework right now. But you know, anybody that's 100% sold in old crop corn, which we are, and we're 70% priced in the new crop corn, you know, anybody that even did that on their own, you know, they're going to make more money if they're in the PLC program and if the market goes up short term. They want a low average for the last half of the marketing year, and you know, it only pay out on probably roughly 80% of their base, but it still is going to be a big check. And so, you know, when you take a look at a Central Illinois farmer who we were sold out at an average, I think, of about 420. If he gets an extra 30 cents on a PLC, then he's at 450 corn. So we're going to see a very, very large separation between those who did a good job of marketing and those who sat and waited. And, you know, I mean, there's some probably people wanting to throw darts, say, okay, well, what do I do now? Yeah, I think the important thing in any market, and we've said this for 40 years, that we have several guidelines we use in making decisions. First of all, we don't sell corn or anything because we think it's going down. We make the decision to sell something because we think it's done going up. No one had any idea back in November through February when we were going to 100% sold that the market would go down this much. I didn't know. Right. No one knew that. But we felt confident it was done going up because reason number two, never store a short crop. Chip, you and I have been around for a long time. That's an old rule of thumb in marketing. Short crops peak early and have a long tail. We're in the tail right now because bullish news is discounted early on. And the other thing is, you know, particularly in the Midwest and Iowa and Minnesota, you know, your basis levels normally have peaked by mid-March. And we had really strong bases. So we felt the decision to be an aggressive seller in corn was very easy. Soybeans, well, I don't feel that way. And we get to that in a minute. But I know you already had one viewer write in and say, you know, what should we be doing with old crop corn, old crop soybeans? Yep. It's a rock and a hard spot in the corn. We closed lower today, but we don't think the bottom is in this. Fundamentally, it was way overpriced through February. It's back to about what we think is going to average for the year now.
Okay.
And because let's keep in mind, we've had two, besides the negative fundamentals we just talked about, we're going to probably plant between 95 and 97 million acres. Carryover is going to jump to over 3 billion bushels. So we have this huge supply and a poor demand. And that's not going to help anything. Plus, I don't think the PLC program helps us, because a lot of farmers look at this 370 price on the PLC and say, well, I can afford to, it's better for me to plant corn than it is beans. So that program is going, has encouraged people to do nothing and has encouraged people to plant more corn. With that said, there's bound to be a bounce in here someplace. And I think if I had no old crop corn sold, what I'd be looking at, if I just throw some prices out, you know, July corn today closed, I think just like around 318, 319. You know, I would start a scale-up selling program at 330 and at 10%, 340, 20%, 350, 30%. You increase your increments and you sell into this kind of market. If it does rally and you get sold out of old crop corn, then you can start marketing the new crop corn. But you've got to start someplace. As my old friend John Martin always said, you know, when in doubt, sell something and hope you're wrong. And that's a pretty good insurance policy in markets like this. You have to start someplace. And, you know, so if a person hasn't sold old crop corn, they're along two years corn right now, that's pretty dangerous in a major bear market. And so hopefully there will be a rally here. The person can start selling into this.
Yep. Don't go to beans yet, Rick, because I want to stay on corn. Another question that came in, and I think the answer is obvious, but the question was, can we expect more export demand at today's price than where we were at the start of March? Well, I think the answer is yes, but the currency influence has got to be accounted for in this too.
You can expect it, but the production is outpacing the export demand.
Yep.
And so you're still going to end up with a lot more corn. I hate to say it, but I think we're going back to a period like the 1980s, where we had, and some people are too young to remember this, but we had long flat corn prices for a few years. And the best way to market was to sell the deferred futures and let it float down to the price of corn. And so you start looking at, say, even DEIS 21 corn. I mean, today it closed at 364. You know, versus nearby May at 310. If this thing doesn't improve, that DEIS 21 corn is just going to keep floating down to where the May is right now. And so, that's an optimistic point of view, but, you know, that goes back into confirmation bias, i.e., we believe what we want to believe, and if a person only wants to believe bullish news, that's fine. But the reality is you got to have to concentrate right now on the stocks to usage ratio, and even if export demand improves, which I think it will, but not enough, you know, how much is it going to change the stocks to usage ratio?
Right.
Again, there's going to be some rallies in this market, but, you know, the trend is your friend, and overall the trend's still down.
Okay, back to domestic. When we do start to see the at-home orders lifted, can we expect – what kind of a recovery do you expect? I'm going to ask it in regards to fluid fuel consumption, liquid fuel consumption, but I'm really talking about the economy. How long does it take to get back to something that looks normal?
My opinion, the economy is never going to be the way it was 2 months ago. Never. You know, people are going to quit traveling. Air travel is never going to be like it was before. And here's my big concern, and I had endless conversations yesterday with people that, who I look at in the real estate market a lot smarter than I am. And they said, you know, the real risk here, in the last recession, it was people not paying their mortgages on their homes. This time it's going to be on commercial real estate.
Yep.
I'm scared to death what's going to happen to say office buildings in Minneapolis and Chicago. What has happened as a result of these stay-at-home orders, people have learned and adjusted to working out of their homes. Mm-hmm. commercial companies are not going to need as much office space as they did in the past. And there are some people in the restaurant business that I know are very knowledgeable what's going on there. They think, you know, of local restaurants, maybe 50% will be shut down.
Right.
And when you start closing restaurants, you take a look at some of these big real estate developments, I'm scared to death. I think the housing market is different than this one. There'll be some problems, but the reality is this market's not as leveraged as it was in the last recession, and we don't have the higher interest rates. But the problem is the mortgages in these office buildings are a lot larger than they are in the homes. So that's the big concern. So it's going to be a slow startup, and people are going to have to adjust to different lifestyles.
Yep.
And I just think, unfortunately, travel is going to be way down.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. Okay, when we come back, let's talk some more real estate. What's the influence on farmland prices? It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Oil production cuts could start early. The Wall Street Journal reports that Saudi Arabia and other OPEC nations are considering cutting oil production as soon as possible rather than wait until the beginning of May. Another headline, the oil problem is not going away anytime soon. The American Petroleum Institute estimates that global oil production is still about 100 million barrels a day, but demand has fallen to 70 million barrels per day. Hand sanitizer production keeping some plants running, but far from a profitable venture for the ethanol producers out there. Dry, warm forecast has Cordoniere concerned about the Brazilian Safrina corn crop. Hey, guys, check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Hey.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Let the proven performance of Prosaro fungicide maximize your grain quality, yield, and profit this season.
No one's Welcome calling back. Anybody a JT chip.
Is that right? Nobody is?
I'm just saying. I just want to clear that up. No. Jive turkey's a little strong, my man.
All right. Well, good to know. All right, we're talking to Rick Brock today. Before we get back to the conversation there, let's go ahead and get a recap of how the markets closed.
Well, Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 1¾ cents higher at 504. July soft red slipped a penny and a quarter to 546¼. May corn futures were a nickel lower at 309¼. December corn closed at 332, down a nickel on the day. May bean futures were 4¼ cents higher at 830¾. Novi bean futures closed at 848. That's up 2¼ cents today. On the livestock side, June live cattle down 102½ to 8407½. May feeders 52½ cents lower, 116.75. And May lean hogs 367½ higher, 44.27½. There's your quick market recap. Back to Chip and Richard Brock.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Okay, let's get back to the conversation. And before we get to more long-term, bigger picture stuff, Rick, this one's off of Twitter again, at BPrice26. Just how important are the recoveries that we saw in the grain markets today? Thinking short-term here.
Well, in the corn, I don't think it's meaningful at all. We closed about mid-range. But in the soybeans, I think it is significant. I mean, we're actually not bearish the soybean market. And then today, soybean meal actually had a key reversal up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this past week on the Brock Report lead story, I wrote the story on the fact that the brightest spot in grain market right now is the soybeans, because the carryover supply in soybeans are going down quite a bit. We think they're going to be next year only a little over 300 million bushels. Okay. And if you look at the stocks to usage ratio of soybeans, they're very underpriced right now. So we do not want to be aggressively selling beans. We're 80% sold on the old crop already, but I don't want to sell the remaining 20% yet. And on the new crop, we're only 20%, but we've been short futures on 30%, and we may take a look at putting that money in the bank here sometime this week. So the rally in the soybeans was significant. I think in wheat, it's significant as well. I think that market has made a bottom, and if we can be higher in the soybean market tomorrow, we could probably say we have confirmed bottom there. Ooh. But corn is going to be a struggle.
plantings on soybeans? On corn, you said 95 to 97 million soybeans.
84 million, I think. I think the USDA last report was 83.5 or something in that area. So, yeah, and we're hearing, particularly in Minnesota, that some farmers are switching their corn seed to soybean seed already. So, you know, with this recent drop in corn, some people might switch more to beans, but as we all know, farmers would much prefer to plant corn over beans. It just feels better when you're combining. And so, you know, I don't think we're going to be too far off. Most everyone, including your company, I think is pretty much in that same ballpark for estimated acreage.
Right. Okay. We were talking about some of the big picture stuff, and I agree completely on the office space issue, Rick. I wrote about, just mentioned it. I didn't write about it. I mentioned it as one of the things that we've got to watch for in the months ahead and years ahead. So let's bring that back closer to home. With everything that is happening right now in these markets, the ag commodities, the impacts on net farm income, the government outlays, when you look at it, take it all in at one time, what does it mean for land values?
Well, first of all, I think the outlay to help support farmers is a pimple on an elephant's back. It's not going to be enough money to really help anybody, particularly the large farms where most of it's being capped at $250,000. But in the farm real estate market, it's going to be another year where the top 20% of farmers who have done a good job of marketing are really going to make a lot of money this year. And then you've got the bottom 30%. They're going to lose a lot of money. And then you got a whole bunch of others in between. And so what that typically means is you're going to have good support still for good valued land. I think there's still a lot of money out there that's saying, well, where are we going to put our money now if we've got any left, or what are we going to do with it? So I think your premium quality land is going to hold up at least for the next 12 months for the foreseeable future very well. But when you get into the more marginal land, I think we're going to see that gap increase quite a bit because the rest of the areas of agriculture aren't going to have the cash to support. You know, if you start looking at, say, comparing 250 bushel corn land to 180 bushel corn land, the 180 bushel corn land is going to struggle. I don't think it's going to go down a lot, but it's going to struggle, and we're going to see that gap going between. So I'm not worried about a lot of or if any, you know, foreclosures on farmland. It's not going to be like the mid 1980s at all. There's just too much wealth in agriculture right now, and it's going to help support the premium land. So the top end is a safe. The bottom end, yeah, it's going to soften a little bit, but it's nothing. It's not going to be anything dramatic. It's the industrial market and the office space market that I think can get hit pretty good in this time.
Okay. All right. So, what's your thoughts about rural communities? They going to be okay going forward?
Okay would probably be the best way to describe it. You know, let's think too about like how ProFarmer and how Brock Associates, how we're even going to conduct farmer meetings anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure you're working on it. We're working on it. You know, are we going to have any big seminars this summer? I don't know right now. I mean, we've canceled all of ours. I would assume you probably have as well. You can't plan anything. And so it's going to change the way we communicate and we ag chemical companies, seed companies communicate with farmers if we have all these social distancing regulations still in place. As far as it impacts local communities, it's not going to be hurt all that bad because local communities and rural areas rely on farmers. And farmers are still in business. We're still working hard. You know, it's a good place to live. You know, we're not having to worry that much about the coronavirus like people in New York City. And so I think it's going to be, you know, full wheels ahead, you know, full power ahead in most farm communities. And, you know, it'll be much less impacted than urban areas. And so I think it's a very positive thing to look forward to in more rural farm towns. The ones that will be hurt are ones where they've lost jobs, where ethanol plants have shut down, and maybe a little bit on the packing side, although that won't be as, that obviously is a serious problem. But ethanol plants have employed employed a lot of people throughout Nebraska, Minnesota, South Dakota, and Iowa, as we all know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I want to switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about this cattle and or these cattle and hog markets. The biggest threat is still being able to process the animals, right?
Yeah, and you know, neither one of us know the answers to that, and I think the industry is working hard and doing a good job of what they can do with the labor issue. I will say this, I think the cattle and hog markets have discounted all the negative news now, and I think, you know, it's just like selling corn back in February, sold it because we thought there was very limited chance of it going up, and who knew how far it could go down. Cattle and hogs to us are the same way, only opposite right now. You know, we are friendly, both the cattle market and particularly the feeder cattle market and the hog market.
Yeah.
Markets bottom on bearish news. We have, I think, all of it thrown in here right now. You know, so I would be a buyer of cash feeder cattle. I would, and we are actually long feeder cattle futures right now. And so we do not want any short hedges on in cattle. We don't want any short hedges on in hogs. Those markets have been hit with all the negative news that I think they're going to get. And any news that comes forward now in the next few weeks will be on the positive side and on the negative side.
I was just going to ask if you wanted to do everything in the cash and stay away from the futures, but you're long the feeder futures in here. I find that interesting. I'd be more inclined to just stay away from the futures here for a little bit. Yes, no?
That's probably correct. I mean, as the old rule of thumb goes, sometimes the safest way to double your money is to fold it in half and put it back in your pocket. That I would not argue with right now. But I do think that we don't have as much risk in the downside in the feeder cattle futures as we do potential on the upside. So, I mean, we'll see. But it's a light position we have in the market.
And you know, even when we get – even if you're right, and I think you probably are when you're talking about the number of restaurants that are at risk of going out of business once we do start to come back, even if we get back 30%, 40% of that demand with what we're doing right now, beef prices and pork prices – I'm not saying cattle and hogs, but beef and pork prices could be incredibly high.
Yeah, they could come back very quickly. I mean, we could make a V bottom in this, and markets that collapse normally do make V bottoms, except corn. It can go long or flat with big supplies. But but everything else, I think, is in the process of making a V bottom.
Okay. All right. You know, last words to the listeners out there, Rick. What do you think's most important going forward?
Well, can I get before I answer that, I want to give a plug for a 3-week trial or a newsletter, the Brock Report. And so if anybody would write this number down, 800-558-3431, they can call that number today and get a free 3-week trial to the Brock Report. Absolutely no one's going to be calling you. Or they can go to our website at www.brockreport.com and do so on our website. So with that said, to answer your question, I think, you know, the main thing is you have to do things in a market in your business to remove as much stress as possible, which is why we like spreading sales on everything, whether and risk. And so when you get into a situation like we're in right now, you don't have the stress if you've at least spread out some of your marketing. And so hopefully most of your listeners have done that. But for those who have not, any kind of strength you get in the corn market here, you've got to do some scale-up selling into it and to relieve the financial stress. And that would be my number one advice.
Rick, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
Wow, this is a pretty good compliment right here.
Yeah.
That was... A listener that listens regularly just said that was the fastest 30 minutes in radio history.
Really?
Yeah, it did go by in a hurry. It's fun to listen to Rick and to have a conversation with him. Although, you know, it is kind of open the floodgates and just kind of sit back and let it happen. You know, it's it's always fun to have Rick on the show. No doubt about that. Now, go ahead.
I found it very encouraging. Yeah, he's calling. I wrote down in my notes here, full bunny recovery in farm country. I like the comparison that he drew to local economies that are more driven by farming and by agriculture as opposed to an urban environment. Is, you know, possibly number one, getting restrictions eased a little bit earlier, and number two, just being able to carry on with what we do just by the nature of how we do what we do out here. I like that a lot. That's good perspective. Hope he's right.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And as you were saying that, you've heard me say this before. You've seen me talk about it at seminars before.
Yeah.
You think about it, there are times when the general economy goes down, but the farm economy goes up.
Yep.
You know, and I've got my standard joke that I tell with it. I probably shouldn't say it on the air because I used it in March and it still worked. Okay. And I've been using it forever. But, you know, as the farm economy is, as the general economy is going up and the farm economy is going down, you're driving a 10-year-old pickup and you're embarrassed to go to town. And then when things turn around and the general economy goes down and the farm economy goes up, you're driving a brand new pickup and you're still embarrassed to go to town.
Nope.
It's kind of the life of a farmer, and it's an interesting dynamic that we deal with in the farm economy with how it relates to the general economy. And if the general economy does struggle for a while coming out of this, and we didn't talk about the equities indices and where they may end up and everything, and whether or not we're going to go back down and test the lows or not, I think we are going to, because it's going to take a while for that recovery to happen. And as Rick was talking about with the urban areas and maybe a little bit slower to recover there, that is what is going to drive the attitudes, the investor attitudes, to a large degree. Uh-huh. I mean, what happens in the flyover states matters. It especially matters to those of us here, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much, sir.
But when it comes to the bulk of the money that is invested in the equities, it's on the coasts.
Yep.
It's on the coast. Yep. And if the coasts are slow to recover through this, it could be a long, drawn out recovery that we see in the equities going forward. Real quick.
Yeah.
I rushed Rick through that 800 number, and I should have given him a little more time, because I knew that he did not surprise me with that, you guys. We talked about it beforehand. Rick's got a 3-week free trial to the Brock Report waiting for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You don't have to
turn that down.
You don't have to say the Brock Report on AgriTalk. You don't have to do anything. All you got to do is call this number. 800. I'm going to get to his website and make sure that I got it right here. 800-558-3431. 800-558-3431. And you can get a three week free trial to the Brock Report. Okay.
You're saying that number is 800-558-3431. Do I have that right?
You know, I actually got that one. The synapses did not snap.
I went easy on you with that
Thank you. Thank you. You did.
I'm not trying to hurt people.
Oh, goodness. Goodness. What else from the conversation there? The PLC doesn't help.
Ooh, yeah.
376. A reference price at 376 is too high? Is that what we heard Rick say?
I think that's what he meant, yeah.
Because if we're, you know, here's one that I've always talked about. Consumers are going to pay for food one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you either pay for it collectively through some sort of supports for agriculture. Okay? And that's the way that we've done it for a long time. We went through a very short period of time in which consumers were required to pay for their food individually.
Mm-hmm.
Started about 2010. All right.
Okay.
Continued until about 2013-14, where consumers were required to pay for their food individually, and they saw that damn retail price and their percentage of their disposable income that they were spending on food go up for the first time like ever, and they freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
They freaked out. Of course, we were looking at the lowest ever government program payments, and the government outlays were the lowest that they've ever been. Now, there's lots of reasons why those two went together. Lots of reasons why those two went together. But it proved my point that you either pay for it you either pay for it individually, or you pay for it as a group, collectively, through supports. I would sure like, I mean, I don't know. I'd kind of like to see some of the individual effort again here, because it does typically mean a higher commodity price out there. Man, this was a heady afternoon, dude.
It really was. It really was.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we're going to have to just kind of take a break.
I'm going to go do something stupid directly. Yeah, something completely meaningless. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Can you file a full report on it tomorrow?
I'll let you know how it goes.
Because we've got we're gonna have an interesting show tomorrow morning. We're gonna be talking about what's going on in the produce markets. We've been mentioning it, but we're gonna dive into it. We've got Tom Karst, the editor of the Packer, and we're gonna have a couple of produce growers on with us as well.
Awesome.
For the Farmer Forum. And then tomorrow afternoon we're diving into the hog market hard. Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University, right here on AgriTalk.